Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Hi, this is Bill, and welcome to this week's episode of Real World Fitness. Today, we have the balance of that great interview I had last week with Precision Nutrition's excellent coach and author, Brian St. Pierre. In addition, Lisa has a really interesting article about one of the most controversial topics that people are always concerned about and our doctors are always on us about, cholesterol. Definitely worth paying attention to. Before we get to those two excellent items, want to make a few quick announcements and just talk to you guys a little bit. Got some interesting emails lately, and I appreciate the support. I'm glad people are listening, and I do try and answer the questions as best I can, but I can't honestly get to everybody and everything. You know, quick questions I'm happy to do, but when someone asks me to set up a whole training program for them, that's just a little bit too much, and I'm happy to do it, but that's also what I do for a living, so my time is worth something. That's all I'm going to say about that. Okay, next week's guest is a lady named Juliette Starrett. This lady is amazing. She was an attorney, successful attorney for several years. She's a world champion white water rafting rower. She's also, along with her husband, Kelly, the owners of one of the, I believe, first CrossFit clubs in the United States. They've owned their CrossFit facility in San Francisco since 2005, and it's one of the most successful ones in the U.S. as well. Juliette's done a lot of community work and has received some awards for her efforts, and she's a very interesting lady, and I really enjoyed talking with her, and I know you guys are going to really enjoy hearing that interview next week. Also, one last reminder, next Wednesday, the 16th, Hadley School for the Blind webinar. I'll be on the air at 11 a.m. Central Standard Time, talking about the things I always talk about, fitness, nutrition, mobility, exercise, getting off your butts and doing something. And you have the opportunity, if you sign in for the webinar, to ask me questions, which I will be happy to answer. Because chances are, if it's your question, it's probably 5 other or 10 other people's question as well. So that's next week. I want to let you guys know, I mentioned last week that I was doing the Lifetime Learners event at the local Broward County Lighthouse, and that went very nicely. Didn't have a huge crowd of people, but I had a couple people that were very interested, and we had a lot of fun with it, and I think it's going to turn into something. Not sure what. And as I've said previously, you know, I don't care if I only get 2 or 3 people. If I get 2 or 3 that really want to do something, I'll be there and I'll work with them. And I think we probably are going to do something there, and I'm excited about that. That was just a nice couple hours, and I really enjoyed doing that. And I think that covers all the housekeeping. So let's get to Lisa right now with that article about cholesterol. Take it away, Lisa.
Today I'm reading an article by a world-renowned heart surgeon. He speaks out on what really causes heart disease. We physicians, with all our training, knowledge, and authority, often acquire a rather large ego that tends to make it difficult to admit we are wrong. So here it is. I freely admit to being wrong. As a heart surgeon with 25 years' experience, having performed over 5,000 open-heart surgeries, today is my day to right the wrong with medical and scientific fact. I trained for many years with other prominent physicians labeled opinion makers. Bombarded with scientific literature, continually attending education seminars, we opinion makers insisted heart disease resulted from the simple fact of elevated blood cholesterol. The only acceptable therapy was prescribed medications to lower cholesterol and a diet that severely restricted fat intake. The latter, of course, we insisted would lower cholesterol and heart disease. Deviations from these recommendations were considered heresy and could quite possibly result in malpractice. It is not working. These recommendations are no longer scientifically or morally defensible. The discovery a few years ago that inflammation in the artery wall is the real cause of heart disease is slowly leading to a paradigm shift in how heart disease and other chronic ailments will be treated. The long-established dietary consequences, of which dwarf any historical plague in terms of mortality, human suffering, and dire economic consequences, despite the fact that 25% of the population takes expensive statin medications, and despite the fact we have reduced the fat content of our diets, more Americans will die this year of heart disease than ever before. Statistics from the American Heart Association show that 75 million Americans currently suffer from heart disease. 20 million have diabetes, and 57 million have prediabetes. These disorders are affecting you younger and younger people in greater numbers every year. Simply stated, without inflammation being present in the body, there is no way that cholesterol would accumulate in the wall of the blood vessel and cause heart disease and strokes. Without inflammation, cholesterol would move freely throughout the body as nature intended. It is inflammation that causes cholesterol to become trapped. Inflammation is not complicated. It is quite simply your body's natural defense to a foreign invader such as bacteria, toxin, or virus. The cycle of inflammation is perfect in how it protects your body from these bacterial and viral invaders. However, if we chronically expose the body to injury by toxins or foods the human body was never designed to process, a condition occurs called chronic inflammation. Chronic inflammation is just as harmful as acute inflammation is beneficial. What thoughtful person would willfully expose himself repeatedly to foods or other substances that are known to cause injury to the body? Well, smokers perhaps, but at least they made that choice willfully. The rest of us have simply followed the recommended mainstream diet that is low in fat and high in polyunsaturated fats and carbohydrates, not knowing we were causing repeated injury to our blood vessels. This repeated injury creates chronic inflammation, leading to heart disease, stroke, diabetes, and obesity. Let me repeat that. The injury and inflammation in our blood vessels is caused by the low-fat diet recommended for years by mainstream medicine. What are the biggest culprits of chronic inflammation? Quite simply, they are the overload of simple, highly processed carbohydrates, sugar, flour, and all the products made from them, and the excess consumption of omega-6 vegetable oils like soybean, corn, and sunflower that are found in many processed foods. Take a moment to visualize rubbing a stiff brush repeatedly over soft skin until it becomes quite red and nearly bleeding. You kept this up several times a day, every day, for 5 years. If you could tolerate this painful brushing, you would have a bleeding, swollen, infected area that became worse with each repeated injury. This is a good way to visualize the inflammatory process that could be going on in your body right now. Regardless of where the inflammation process occurs, externally or internally, it is the same. I have peered inside thousands upon thousands of arteries. A diseased artery looks as if someone took a brush and scrubbed repeatedly against its wall. Several times a day, every day, the foods we eat create small injuries compounding into more injuries, causing the body to respond continuously and appropriately with inflammation. While we savor the tantalizing taste of a sweet roll, our bodies respond alarmingly, as if a foreign invader arrived declaring war. Foods loaded with sugars and simple carbohydrates, or processed with omega-6 oils for long shelf life, have been the mainstay of the American diet for 6 decades. These foods have been slowly poisoning everyone. How does eating a simple sweet roll create a cascade of inflammation to make you sick? Imagine spilling syrup on your keyboard, and you have a visual of what occurs inside the cell. When we consume simple carbohydrates such as sugar, blood sugar rises rapidly. In response, your pancreas secretes insulin, whose primary purpose is to drive sugar into each cell where it is stored for energy. If the cell is full and does not need glucose, it is rejected to avoid extra sugar gumming up the works. When your full cells reject the extra glucose, blood sugar rises, producing more insulin, and the glucose converts to stored fat. What does all this have to do with inflammation? Blood sugar is controlled in a very narrow range. Extra sugar molecules attach to a variety of proteins that in turn injure the blood vessel's wall. This repeated injury to the blood vessel wall sets off inflammation. When you spike your blood sugar level several times a day, every day, is exactly like taking sandpaper to the inside of your delicate blood vessels. While you may not be able to see it, rest assured it is there. I saw it in over 5,000 surgical patients spanning 25 years who all shared one common denominator: inflammation in their arteries. Let's get back to the sweet roll. That innocent-looking goodie not only contains sugars, it is baked in one of many omega-6 oils, such as soybean. Chips and fries are soaked in soybean oil. Processed foods are manufactured with omega-6 oils for longer shelf life. While omega-6s are essential, they are part of every cell membrane controlling what goes in and out of the cell. They must be in the correct balance with omega-3s. If the balance shifts by consuming excessive omega-6, the cell membrane produces chemicals called cytokines that directly cause inflammation. Today's mainstream American diet has produced an extreme imbalance of these two fats. The ratio of imbalance ranges from 15 to 1 to as high as 30 to 1 in favor of omega-6. That's a tremendous amount of cytokines causing inflammation. In today's food environment, a 3-to-1 ratio would be optimal and healthy. To make matters worse, the excess weight you are carrying from eating these foods creates overloaded fat cells that pour out large quantities of pro-inflammatory chemicals that add to the injury caused by having high blood sugar. The process that began with a sweet roll turns into a vicious cycle over time that creates heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, and finally, Alzheimer's disease, as the inflammatory process continues unabated. There is no escaping the fact that the more we consume prepared and processed foods, the more we trip the inflammation switch little by little each day. The human body cannot process, nor was it designed to consume, foods packed with sugars and soaked in omega-6 oils. There is but one answer to quieting inflammation, and that is returning to foods closer to their natural state. To build muscle, eat more protein. Choose carbohydrates that are very complex, such as colorful fruits and vegetables. Cut down on or eliminate inflammation causing omega-6 fats like corn and soybean oil, and the processed foods that are made from them. 1 tablespoon of corn oil contains 7,280 milligrams of omega-6. soybean contains 6,940 milligrams. Instead, use olive oil or butter from grass-fed beef. Animal fats contain less than 20% omega-6 and are much less likely to cause inflammation than the supposedly healthy oils labeled polyunsaturated. Forget the science that has been drummed into your head for decades. The science that saturated fat alone causes heart disease is non-existent. The science that saturated fat raises blood cholesterol is also very weak. Since we now know that cholesterol is not the cause of heart disease, the concern about saturated fat is even more absurd today. The cholesterol theory led to the no-fat, low-fat recommendations that in turn created the very foods now causing an epidemic of inflammation. Mainstream medicine made a terrible mistake when it advised people to avoid saturated fat in favor of foods high in omega-6 fats. We now have an epidemic of arterial inflammation leading to heart disease and other silent killers. What you can do is choose whole foods your grandmother served and not those your mom turned to as grocery store aisles filled with manufactured foods. By eliminating inflammatory foods and adding essential nutrients from fresh, unprocessed food, you will reverse years of damage to your arteries and throughout your body from consuming the typical American diet. Dr. Dwight Lundell is the past chief of staff and chief of surgery at Banner Heart Hospital, Mesa, Arizona. His private practice cardiac care center was in Mesa, Arizona. Recently, Dr. Lundell left surgery to focus on the nutritional treatment of heart disease. He is the founder of Healthy Humans Foundation that promotes human health with a focus on helping large corporations promote wellness. He is also the author of The Cure for Heart Disease and the Great Cholesterol Lie. Hope you enjoyed this article.
Thanks, Lisa. That's some great information. Cholesterol is a topic that people are always talking about and always concerned about. So thought that was a good, timely article and definitely worth listening to. Now, before we get to the second half of my interview with precision nutrition coach and author Brian St. Pierre, let's talk about my favorite source for reading material, audiblepodcast.com/serotalk. Sign up for that free 1 month trial. Go to that address, audiblepodcast.com/serotalk. And you can select from literally thousands, I don't want to say hundreds of thousands, but I'd say maybe tens of thousands of titles, fiction, nonfiction, old radio programs, all kinds of stuff. And if you sign up for that free 1 month trial, you get one free download of any item, no matter its value. And you're under absolutely no obligation beyond that. If you're smart, though, you'll continue to maintain a membership and get new stuff every month because they're constantly adding, and it's just a really cool site with a lot of great Audible books. One last time, that address, audiblepodcast.com/serotalk. And now, part two of my interview with author, nutritionist, and really cool guy, Brian St. Pierre. There's a product out there that kind of intrigues me, and I'm curious. I've seen one company that specializes in it, and I think a couple other people that have a few odd products, topical nutrition products. I know, like Mike Mahler has a magnesium oil, and there's another company that has a whole line of patches. They have a vitamin patch. They have a creatine patch. They have a BCAA patch, and a variety of patches. What are your thoughts on products like that?
That's a good question. I mean, I can't claim to be an expert in what your skin can and cannot absorb. I mean, obviously your skin is your largest and it's also organ. It's a very absorptive organ, but there are certainly limits as to what it can absorb and what it can't based on, you know, molecular size and weight. And you're getting me back into organic and biochemistry things that I don't don't recall because I don't use them on a regular basis. To my knowledge, the magnesium one, like your traditional Epsom salt baths or, you know, the oil that Mike uses, can and will be absorbed. There are definitely things that can be absorbed. Fatty acids, we know. Coconut oil, for example, if you put on your skin, it can be absorbed and you actually get some of those calories. I'm not sure how that would work for amino acids and things like creatine and, you know, all kinds of vitamins and minerals. You know, something like calcium, I imagine, might be incredibly difficult. You know, you need a lot of calcium. I don't know, quite frankly. I'd have to look into to see if there's any research there and then how consistently or what the actual rate of absorption is versus the amount of product that you're using. You know, for example, we were talking about curcumin. Like, there's a reason that you'll see different types. They add like a black pepper extract to curcumin because it helps you absorb more of it, because by itself, you don't absorb very much of it. It'll pass through your GI tract. It'll provide some anti-inflammatory effects right there, but not a ton will get into your bloodstream. So they're creating new formulations that cause much greater uptake. So just because you're putting 300 grams or 300 milligrams on your skin doesn't mean you're going to get that much into your bloodstream. So I'd be really curious to see if they have any data on amount applied versus amount actually absorbed. I'm not sure. It's certainly interesting, but to me, I'd rather just take a multivitamin pill than have to slather a whole bunch of things onto my skin or put a bunch of patches on my skin. But that might just be me.
Well, they claim that the dosages with the patches don't have to be as high because they're not passing through the digestive system and being destroyed by the acids in your stomach and so forth.
I mean, I guess that's theoretically possible, but the acids in your stomach also help to make sure if anything's contaminated, they kill off bacteria. I mean, that's why it's such an acidic environment. It makes it harder for problematic compounds and problematic bacteria to then make it through into your small intestines. And so, you know, the most vitamins and minerals are not destroyed in that process. Sometimes it can actually enhance their uptake. Like vitamin B12, for example, you create intrinsic factor in your stomach that allows you to break apart B12 from whatever it's attached to, whether it's a methyl bond or a cobalamin bond. You're getting me into physiology I don't quite recall.
That's okay. You're getting too complicated.
Either way, it helps you to absorb the B12. You know, as you age, you produce less of that. So unless they're putting in B12 in a, you know, I don't know how they would do it. Maybe they have a way of doing it that can, you know, make it by intrinsic factor. Like they can do that with sublingual vitamin B12 drops. You take the drops under your tongue. That can increase B12 stores. I mean, there are certainly ways around it, but I have a hard time believing that it's vastly superior than the way humans have evolved to take in vitamins and minerals over, you know, millions of years. And I could be wrong. I just don't know enough about it.
No, that's fine, because I've used some of their products and I've seen them. They are used to be a heavy advertiser of one of the, I think, the only daily fitness podcast out there. And it really made me curious what somebody who actually has some good knowledge of nutrition, such as yourself, would think about the products. Going back to what you said about coconut oil. So everybody out there that uses coconut oil to tan, you're getting extra calories from it.
You are, actually. Absolutely. How much? You know, probably not a tremendous amount, but it can certainly, you know, if you're using a couple tablespoons over your entire body, you know, a couple tablespoons is a couple hundred grams or a couple hundred calories, you're going to absorb a good chunk of that. I'd have to go back and look at some of the data, because they do actually have research on how much of it you absorb. And obviously it varies per person, but on average, there is a number. I don't recall off the top of my head, but it's somewhat substantial. It wasn't like 10%. It was more than that.
That's interesting. I would have never thought about that. So if you're using a tanning product that's got a lot of coconut oil in it, which I think a lot of them do, at least a lot of them smell like they do, or you're just using a pure oil, which some people do. And I guess the same thing would be the case if you're using peanut oil, olive oil, any other kind of an oil on your skin.
Yeah. I mean, I would imagine any of those, you're going to absorb, your skin is an absorptive organ, right? So you're going to absorb some of those things. Now, I mean, don't become neurotic and try to count how many calories you're getting in from the coconut oil you occasionally put on your skin. That's not my end goal. But just be aware that it can add some calories. You know, it's just something to be mindful of and to kind of factor in, but not to do so in a overly neurotic fashion.
Which is very easy to do.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Especially with people who are really interested in this kind of stuff, right? They want to factor those things in. They want to maximize their results. And I get that and I appreciate that. But I just always want to be cautious of encouraging people to take it to the point where it actually decreases your quality of life, right? Because it's become so important to you that it squeezes out other valuable things that a human requires, like social interaction and, you know, and things of that nature. Other things that supply benefits to mental health and emotional health. And I think that can sometimes get lost in the fitness and nutrition industry. And so it's something I always try to encourage. It's something I've just learned over the course of my career, you know, as I've evolved and matured. So
it's funny because it's like you said, it can become like an OCD kind of thing, almost a phobia. Makes me think, I was at a party at my attorney's house about a month ago, and his trainer was there, and I've been wanting to meet this guy because I don't really agree with what David tells me he has him doing, but he's happy with him, so, you know, what can you do about that? And we're all standing around the table, and there was a really amazing homemade smoked fish dip, and his wife gave him some of it, and he went, well, there's mayonnaise in that. I'm sure there's mayonnaise in that. And I said, it's not going to kill you. No, but I can't eat that. And it was very hard not to laugh in this man's face. I have nothing but respect for him, but it was so hard to, and this isn't a 20-year-old kid. This is a grown man. He's probably in his 40s or something. And okay, I asked my wife, what kind of shape is he? And he's in great shape. He's not a big guy, but he looks like he's in really great shape. Went, okay, he can't have a little smoked fish dip on a whole wheat cracker. It's going to ruin his life. And it was so hard not to laugh.
It's, you know, and clearly if it works for him, it works for him. And I don't want to come across as saying it's that it never works for people, but it's that all or none mindset of I can only have this and I can never have that is something that we try to generally actively discourage in clients. Because what we just found over time is it just leads to a disordered approach to eating and or just makes it hard to lead a normal and enjoyable life. Yeah, you go to social events and you can't actually partake in a lot of the food that's being offered. And sharing food is a very, very time-honored, like, human tradition. You know, we celebrate holidays over food and we get together with family and we have food. And you
name it, food is a... We celebrate deaths with food. We celebrate everything with food.
Everything, right? It's a communal experience. So if you can't partake in that, you tend to be missing out a little bit on, you know, the whole community aspect of food. And to me, that's just unfortunate. Now, there are people whose livelihood depend on them being at a very specific body size and body weight and body composition, and that's one thing. But if your livelihood doesn't depend on that, you know, and you feel like you can't even, yeah, you can't have a small whole wheat cracker with a little bit of some, you know, particular dip on there, you know, that's unfortunate. And it might be something to just reflect on and consider and see if that, you know, is really worth the sacrifice to you. And if it is, that's fine, as long as you are aware of the sacrifice and okay with the sacrifice. But like for me personally, like, you're damn right, I would have had that cracker. That sounded delicious. You know, do I eat enormous amounts of mayonnaise on a regular basis? Of course not. But on a situation like that, you know, for sure.
It's not going to kill you.
And I think it's important a lot of times for people like that to get that big picture perspective. Like you eat, let's say you eat 4 meals a day, 7 days a week, like you're eating 28 meals a week. If one meal contains one small aspect that's less than ideal, like it's a negligible part of your diet, you know, it's keeping that big picture in mind.
Okay, cravings. If you're just absolutely craving garbage, what are your thoughts on that? How, you know, do you just like count to 10 and hope it goes away? Or if you're craving chips, have a couple chips and accept it and go on with your life? Or how do you deal with, because we all have them occasionally.
Absolutely. No, you nailed it in the latter one there, the second option. Like what we really teach is, and when you try to just have an iron will and ignore it, it's impossible. You can't ignore it forever, you know? And so that ends up, what ends up happening is you hold out and you hold out and you hold out and then you feel deprived. And then when you do finally allow yourself to have some, it ends up going to excess more often than not. So what we really teach, if you're really having a craving, like say you want some chocolate, go buy yourself like a nice high quality bar of chocolate, have a small piece, but really, or just eat some, savor it, enjoy it, and then move on. There's no need to feel guilty. There's no need to feel like you've cheated or fallen off the wagon. It's all part of the experience. It's not about, you know, depriving yourself, but the key is to eat it mindfully and to eat it slowly. So it's actually an enjoyed experience. Because people with disordered eating tend to, will crave something. There's some really interesting research here. And then they'll eat it, but they'll eat it really rapidly. And actually you won't even receive enjoyment from the food. Krista Scott Dixon, who works at PN, has her PhD. And I mean, she's an incredibly valuable resource on that kind of stuff and talks about it all the time and how it's not even the food itself that's providing the hit. It's the concept or the idea of having the food. And so getting people to eat it slowly and mindfully just to enjoy that indulgence, whatever it might be, and then to move on from it, it takes time and it takes practice and it takes building awareness and some certain skills, but it can be so valuable because then you can eat some chocolate when you're craving some chocolate and not feel bad about it, have a reasonable amount, and then get on with your day because it just is what it is. Now, if you're doing that four times a day, that's not the same thing. But if you want to have an occasional muffin, or you know what, you've had a craving for a donut that you haven't had in 6 months, like, it's okay to have a donut. And to have your donut, enjoy the hell out of it, and then just get back to what you normally do. And I think that's the key, is not letting it derail you into this, you know, cycle of, well, I've blown my diet, I'm going to eat whatever. No, you haven't blown anything. You're allowed some discretionary calories. Just is what it is, and it's just part of your intake. It's been a small part of your intake, and just get back to doing what you normally do, and you're going to be golden.
You're not training for the Olympics or the Ms. Fitness or figure contest, and you know it's you're an average person that's trying to be healthy. It's not going to kill you,
right? And even if you are, a lot of those guys do the same thing. They indulge, and they it's not even for people unless it's a very specific time of the training year. There's very specific times they can't. Even really advanced individuals will indulge in things like that on occasion because it allows you to feel sane and not feel deprived, which makes it very hard to stick to your approach. If you feel deprived and you can't stick to your approach, it's not going to last. And so the best diets or the best nutritional approaches are the ones you can stick to. And the ones you can stick to usually allow for some discretionary calories because that's what allows people to actually do it and not, you know, lose their mind feeling like they can't have certain things that they enjoy.
That's the problem with diets. Diets have a lot of negative connotations for people. People think of a diet and they think of a temporary thing. And it you know, there's another gentleman I interviewed a few weeks ago, and he said, you know, he uses the approach, do you think you could be doing this 5 years from now? And if the client says, yeah, probably, then it'll work. If they go, hell no, I'd be lucky to do this for 6 months, then it ain't going to work.
Right. And there's a time and a place for that. You know, if a woman's getting ready for her wedding and she wants to lose a certain amount of weight in a certain amount of time, we might do some things that aren't meant to be a five-year approach. But the key is to then transition to something you can see yourself doing for 5 years. You know, it's not do this short-term thing and then just fall off the cliff and get back to, you know, previous habits that may not have been ideal. It's even if you utilize short-term approaches for certain things, it's important to always transition to something that you could answer yes to that question. Can you see yourself doing this in 5 years? I like that question. That's great.
Well, it kind of makes sense, and he applies it to the training and to the nutrition, because it goes to, and I like to reference other people just because it seems like there's so many parallels, but like Dan John talks about having two intense 6 to 8 week training periods in a year, and then the rest of the time just going in the gym and just putting in the time, enjoying the workouts, but you can't go on that killer, you know, like you say, all right, I'm getting ready for the wedding, or I'm getting ready for my 20-year high school reunion. I'm going to kill myself so I look awesome. But then I got to get back to reality.
And that's oftentimes you'll see young trainers coach people that way. Like they work out, you know, really hard and they want their 45-year-old client to work out that hard. And your 45-year-old client doesn't have the work capacity or the recovery capacity of a 25-year-old, and also probably has way more life stresses. You know, maybe they have a significant other and children and a mortgage and other things that you generally don't always have at 25. And so you don't need to train that way. I couldn't train now like I did when I was 20, 22, 23 years old. I had a very, very different life. You know, the context of the rest of my life has changed significantly. So my training has changed to accommodate that. And it's the same kind of idea. You know, you can't just pound a square peg into a round hole and have everybody doing the same workout regardless of other life circumstances. And it's incredibly important to keep that context in mind.
But the book says.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, this is what I do and it works for me.
Yeah, well, you're 25. You're living with mom and dad. They're paying your food and your supplement bill.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I know we're getting near the end of the amount of time that you have to give us today, and there's so much more I want to talk to you about. I want to talk about paleo. I want to talk about a variety of other things. So we're going to have to, somewhere in the future, do this again. But I want to, since we've talked about some of the bizarre supplements and bizarre things out there, what the hell is bulletproof coffee?
Oh, that's a loaded question in many ways. Essentially, what it boils down to is it is a coffee concoction that is meant to have these incredible cognitive body composition and health benefits. It's coffee, very specific coffee generally, a quote-unquote low mycotoxin coffee combined with butter and either coconut oil or medium-chain triglyceride oil. Medium-chain triglycerides are a special type of fat found in coconuts, and that's just a more concentrated version. So it's all blended up, and it's meant to, you know, feed your brain and do all these specific things that there's no real proof in any way, shape, or form it's going to do. And it's created by a guy who named Dave Asprey, who has some interesting ideas, but, you know, has definitely been a brilliant marketer of his ideas more than anything else. And I just have a hard time kind of buying the whole thing, hook, line, and sinker, from a nutritional perspective. But here's the thing, like, it works for some people, or some people at least believe it works for them. And if it does, and if the rest of your intake, you know, can line up, I can be okay with that. I'm not, like I mentioned before, I'm a very results-oriented coach. And so ultimately, if it's working for you and your, you know, health markers are still in place and you're still meeting your protein needs and your carbohydrate needs and, you know, and your fruit and vegetable needs and your performance is doing fine and your body composition markers are doing fine, and we're going to roll with it. If you enjoy it and you find it does seem to give you a boost, awesome. But I'm not going to have people do it just because in theory it should work or could work. Or if they're doing it and it's not working for them, you know, I'll try to encourage them to try something else. But on the whole, I wouldn't say it's something I would encourage as a starting point, because it's a coffee concoction that's going to have, you know, several hundred calories in it, which can add up very quickly.
Well, if you want a coffee concoction with several hundred calories, just go to Starbucks and get a double mocha chino frappe, whatever it is. It probably tastes better.
You're asking the wrong guy. I get black coffee, so I don't know. I hear people order those things. I just don't even know what they are. I would just be at a loss to explain what it is to you.
I tasted one once that somebody else had, and I said, are you sure there's coffee in there?
Tastes like a dessert?
Yeah, exactly. It's a milkshake kind of thing.
Yeah, with some caffeine infused in it, which, hey, you know what? It's probably delicious. And if that's your one item for discretionary calories on the day, we can probably make it work. But when it's that on top of something else, on top of something else, that's when it becomes an issue.
Okay. And well, that covers everything I think we have time for today. So, Brian, can you give us a parting thought to wrap this up with?
Oh, a parting thought. Yeah, I'd say my parting thought is, what I always try to encourage people when it comes to nutrition, whether you're a fitness professional or someone who's just interested and passionate about the topic, is to keep the big picture in mind, you know, to keep it real, to keep it grounded in real life, you know, to not always shoot for what might be perceived as the ideal. Like, in many ways, it's okay to be good enough. That doesn't mean to not work hard or to not strive to improve, but, you know, you're not necessarily going to be able to measure up to what you see someone say they do in a magazine. You know, Michael Phelps was training 8 hours a day and eating 14,000 calories allegedly as he prepped for the Olympics. Like, most of that was just propaganda to psych out his own opponents. You know, same thing, you know, Arnold did the same stuff when he was competing in bodybuilding. He would just say he did these things that he didn't even do to psych people out. And a lot of the same stuff happens in magazines when you read articles about what X person's doing or what this diet can do. Long as you, for the most part, you know, use those hand size portion guidelines. You know, get your protein in, your lean proteins, some quality carbs, plenty of veggies, and some healthy fats, whether it's paleo or vegan or what have you doesn't so much matter. You know, it's about finding what works for you in the context of your real, messy, constantly changing life, and not having to live up to anyone else's ideal of what nutrition should be.
Okay. That's a good way of wrapping it up. And once again, what you're saying, I've heard this ongoing theme in several people who I have a lot of respect for. It's finding what works for you and what you can stick with and what's real.
Absolutely.
And this is Bill with Real World Fitness, and we've been talking with Brian St. Pierre of Precision Nutrition, also of, I believe it's BSPtraining.com. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think it's Brian. I rarely update my personal blog these days, BrianSt.PierreTraining.com. But there's lots of good, you know, historical stuff on there, like my day in the life posts have always been popular. But the best place to find out stuff for me is definitely PrecisionNutrition.com. I contribute a lot to the blog there, and I, you know, speak on behalf of PN and do things of that nature. That'd be the best place to kind of keep up to date with me.
Well, we'll put the put your web address for your blog in the show notes as well. As I said, this has been Brian St. Pierre talking with me from Precision Nutrition. This is Bill on Real World Fitness, and I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Have an awesome week, and I'll see you next week.
All right, thanks, Bill. I appreciate it.
Real World Fitness is a production of the Serotalk Podcast Network in cooperation with KosiabaFitness.com. All questions, comments, and feedback should be submitted to resources@serotalk.com. If you're listening on a mobile device, use your iBlink radio app to submit an iReport. Promotional consideration paid for by audible.com.